This presentation has been previously broadcast.
The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Corruption, weaponization, any kind of misconduct that exists with the American people.
It doesn't solve it. But the FBI will crush you. This government will crush you and your family if you try to expose the truth about things that they are doing that are wrong. And we are all examples of that.
I can't think of a more sobering way to end a hearing. I yield back.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, we will we'll dive into a little bit of that. The FBI whistleblower has come forward. I don't know if you've been following that story at all. But boy, there's a lot to tell. Apparently, Catholics and pro-lifers have been targeted by the FBI, and we'll dive into that coming up in just a moment. But if you're just joining me, or maybe you were with me a few moments ago, I was speaking with Allison Ricciardi, a wonderful friend of the program, a very gifted therapist, and we were just talking a little bit about a wonderful article she wrote, and it's called You Won't See the Hand of God If You Focus on the Fist of the Enemy, and you can learn more about her at CatholicTherapist.com or Raphael Remedy. And when we went to break, Chris from Kansas called in. She suffered just tremendous loss, and the pain from that is deep. And she's got a great question for Allison. Chris, thank you for joining us. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have two daughters. One has five children, and she lost a baby last July at 6 weeks pregnant. And I came to Kansas. I actually live in California. I came to Kansas to be with my older daughter for the birth of her ninth child. The night that she went into labor, her uterus ruptured. The placenta released. They got her to the hospital in time to stop the bleeding and repair her body. But the baby was stillborn. After 9 months of carrying that child and losing it. And just a few days after we buried Tobias, my other daughter, who became pregnant again, lost her little boy at 16 and a half weeks pregnant. How do you go on with such loss? I have been a believer in Jesus Christ since I was 5 years old. I joined the Catholic Church when I was 60 years old. I believe in God to do the right thing. But how do we believe in something positive coming out of this?
Well, Chris, first off, I am so sorry. I mean, these are terrible, terrible losses, and it's very painful. I think right now is the time that you need to grieve, and it's okay to question God. It's okay to be even angry at God because you're hurting. We're not going to find good in what is absolutely bad. I mean, these are bad things that happened, and they're very, very painful. Over time, though, you know, God will heal. And you'll be able, if you're asking him, show me. You'll see people stepping up and you know, being helpful, being compassionate. There's going to be good around this, but we don't want to, you know, we can't just deny that it's a horrible thing that happened. And you have a right to feel your feelings and grieve. If you find you're overwhelmed with it, I would encourage you to reach out to a Catholic therapist to process the feelings. You know, what you feel is very legitimate, and you know, it's terrible. You know, we don't know why God allows things. He doesn't ordain these things. He allows them to happen, but he can bring a greater good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, lean into Mary, lean into her, because she knows that pain of losing her child, you know, and that's a special pain that, you know, just it's terrible, and I'm so sorry, but I think trust that over time you will see good surrounding this situation.
Yeah.
People that you wouldn't have expected that will be there for you, you know. But right now, it's a time to grieve, and I'm so sorry. Yeah. So sorry for your loss.
Chris, there really is no answer, to be honest with you. I mean, this is one of the great mysteries of this life. St. Augustine, a great doctor of the Catholic Church, he said that God only permits evil if a greater good can come out of it. We don't have that 30,000-foot view. You know, we're in the forest right now. We're in the woods. We don't see the big picture. God does. And when you're in the storm like this, it's so hard. When you're in the middle of that pain, it's so hard when you're dealing with misery to ever see how good can come from something like this. The mystery of evil has confounded theologians from the beginning of time. And sometimes all we have to do is surrender and just trust that God is good, that he is love, and that he somehow, some way, in a way that we can't comprehend, will produce good from this tragedy. I had a producer who had 5 miscarriages. And, you know, any woman who's ever went through a miscarriage, you know the bitter pain of that type of loss. She didn't understand it at the time, but God would later use her pain and her suffering to help her communicate with other women. She would ultimately go on, and God would bless her with, I think she's a family of 5 right now, but to write a book about this. And at the time, she didn't know how God would use it, but her suffering and her pain now is being used by God in a powerful way. So if you're experiencing sorrow, if you have trouble in your life, you're not alone. Others are where you were. And more importantly, you know, we have to remember that Jesus has been where you are. So just open yourself to the experience of that transformation. John Paul II said, if it's suffering more than anything else, which will clear the way for grace, it will transform your soul. So God's at work. He really is. And my heart, like Allison's, goes out to you. I can't imagine the pain. And I just want to give you my deepest condolences and my prayers. I will remember your family tonight when we pray, okay?
Thank you so much.
Right, I'm glad you're listening.
The babies that died were named Talitha, Samuel, and Tobias.
Beautiful names. Very beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, God bless you, Chris.
Both of them are very, very religious, and I just don't understand how God could do this to them.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, go ahead, Allison.
It isn't so much God doing it to them. It's he allowed it.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's okay to be angry and talk to him about your anger like you would with anybody that you love, but don't turn your back on him. Don't close him out. He's there.
You know, it's at times like this, too, when our suffering, you know, when it intersects with our faith in God, that's where profound meaning can take place. And Chris, I would suggest this, and this is hard, and I almost don't even want to say it because I'm not suffering, I'm not in the storm, but unite the pain you're going through right now to that of Christ on the cross. Because when you do, your suffering actually becomes redemptive. It becomes meritorious. And you could participate with our Lord in redeeming the world. I mean, there's a power in suffering. St. Faustina, great recipient of divine mercy, says, you know, suffering in some respects is even a gift. I know that doesn't make sense, but this is our time to suffer. And there'll be a time when we're on the other side of the veil. We'll no longer be able to do this. And we'll wish that we had really embraced this cross. When you discover the meaning of suffering, you're going to gain a key to untold spiritual treasures. Denise in Michigan, thank you for joining us. I know you want to talk to Chris as well, so go right ahead.
Who is it?
You're up, Denise. Go right ahead.
That's okay.
You.
Yeah. I didn't even get her name. I had it on for a few minutes out in the car. I didn't get the lady's name who was just talking.
Yeah, her name's Chris.
Chris. I lost a baby also through stillbirth. And it's a difficult thing to go through all that waiting for a wonderful bundle of joy. And when I lost her, everybody says to me, well, what are you on? And I said, what do you mean? They said, well, what kind of drugs are you on that you're so peaceful? Mm-hmm. And I said, I have the Lord. And whatever reason he wanted her back, I felt like that was his decision. Yeah. I'm not a Catholic Christian. I am a Christian.
Yeah.
And I truly believe that it was in his will to take her back. And on her gravestone, I have too good for this world.
Wow.
And I'm praying for Chris now that I know her name. And I was praying for her even before I knew her name, that she will not turn away from God and know that there's some good that's going to be out of this, and she might not know it, but out of all these losses that she's had with both her girls, and I just wanted to say God bless her.
Well, Denise, thank you so much for those kind words, and Chris is on hold. I know she hears you. Allison, I've got to leave it right there. Some final thoughts as we conclude.
Well, I think Denise said it very well. Don't turn from God. He will bring good. We see good in the helpers that come. We see good over time. But honor your pain right now. And God will come through. He will come through.
Chris, we'll be praying for you. And I'll tell you one other thing. You're not alone. There are a lot of people who heard your story and who are going to be praying for you and for your daughters and for your whole family. All right. Hey, thank you, Allison, for being here with us. Very grateful.
You're welcome, Drew. God bless you.
You can check out Allison, RayfieldRemedy.com, and there'll be a lot of links there as well. We'll have her back. And Patrick's going to be linking over to her article. Say a prayer for Chris. I mean, my heart goes out to this grandmother, this mother, and for the pain that she's suffering. It's one of the great mysteries of this life. I'll tell you what. I'm going to take a short break. And when we come back, James Harden, Reverend James Harden, will be joining us. I do have some other news I want to get to with you. So feel free to join us if you'd like. The number here is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. There's a couple things going on. One, the FBI whistleblower has come out. And believe it or not, this is not really a surprise. It seems that Catholics and pro-lifers have been in the crosshairs. We'll tell you what's being reported and actually play some audio. Then we'll also take a look at the debt ceiling. There's some advancements there. Stay with me. Hey, if you're in the market for health insurance, well, our sponsor, the Catholic Order of Foresters, is here to help you and your family find the most cost-effective health plan. Learn more at relevantradio.com/Forester.
All the news and issues now that are happening now.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Thanks for joining me. It is great to be here with you today. Let me bring you up to speed on what's happening. You remember the FBI, the story of how they messed up with pro-lifer Mark Houck. He was that high-profile arrest story. He got arrested on trumped-up charges. The FBI goes in with guns drawn. There was a pre-dawn raid. You think this guy was a drug runner. He was simply praying outside of an abortion clinic. A clinic worker harassed, I think, his kids, and he pushed back and drug out of his home, and the whole family witnessing that. He was acquitted by a jury of a couple months later, but he went through a tough time. And you would think that the agency, after that misstep, and I'm being generous with that word, would learn a few lessons about targeting pro-lifers who are just abiding by the law. You'd be wrong, because it has come out that last month, and we played some of this audio a little bit earlier, two female FBI agents showed up at the childhood home of a young woman named Elise Ketch. The Daily Signal was reporting that she's a member of the progressive pro-life group called Uprising. I think it's a group mostly left-leaning activists who for some reason really... Well, they believe that abortion is murder of an unborn child. So at least they had that right, right? The group gained prominence after they exposed babies. There were five preemie-sized aborted babies known as the Five that had been thrown away. They were, discarded from a clinic in Washington, D.C. by whoever the abortionist was, and they brought it to light. Ketch no longer lives with her mother, whose home the two agents showed up at, and her mother... obviously didn't tell the agents where she currently was living. The agent says, oh, we just want to talk. She's not in trouble. At least at the time, there were only two of them. No guns were drawn. I want to be fair. Maybe they were just doing their job. I do want to be fair about it. I mean, maybe it was a very casual conversation. But now, here's the thing. The reason I bring this up, because maybe there's nothing to it, maybe there is something more. Now we're finding out that there is something that's running a little bit deeper. The House Select Committee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government, they held a couple hearings about the federal government targeting pro-lifers and Catholics. And yesterday, Mark Houck testified about his encounter with the FBI last year. Committee Chairman Jim Jordan, he held a press conference today, and he says that the committee has spoken with more than two dozen FBI whistleblowers who have all said that they're concerned, you know, about what they're saying. They said there is indeed a concerted effort to go after pro-lifers and Catholics. I want to underline that again, because initially I really found it hard to believe that we would have a federal agency targeting pro-lifers and Catholics. I know a lot of you are saying, well, Drew, why would you find that hard to believe? I don't know. I want to believe that, you know, it's just not the case. But here you've got two dozen FBI whistleblowers saying no. That's the case. So at the press conference, he says, if you're a parent attending a school board meeting, if you're a pro-lifer praying at a clinic, if you're a Catholic simply going to mass, you are a target of the government, a target of the FBI. And he added that officials attempted to inflate their investigations to treat them as domestic and violent extremism cases. We're going to play for you just a quick piece of audio from one of the whistleblowers today. You can hear what he had to say. And then Reverend James Harden, who is CEO of Compass Care Pregnancy Services, his clinic, who was the one in Buffalo, New York, that was firebombed last year, and the FBI has been dragging their feet on getting that issue solved. He's going to join me as well for some perspective. But I thought you'd take a listen on one of the FBI whistleblowers.
Guards currently in place at the FBI are clearly inadequate and must be reworked to protect whistleblowers and others who are inappropriately targeted. The FBI can extract whatever they want from me. I'm willing to bear that burden. I've sworn to defend this country from enemies, both foreign and domestic, even if that means sacrificing my life. I've lived that oath out since first enlisting in the Army, consistently saying, here am I, send me. My oath, however, did not include sacrificing the hopes, dreams, and livelihood of my family, my strong, beautiful, and courageous wife, and our four sweet and beautiful daughters who have endured this process along with me. In weaponized fashion, the FBI allowed me to accept orders to a new position halfway across the country. They allowed us to sell my family's home. They ordered me to report to the new unit when our youngest daughter was 2 weeks old. Then, on my first day on the new assignment, they suspended me, rendering my family homeless. They refused to release our goods, including our clothes, for weeks. All I wanted to do was serve my country by stopping bad guys and protecting the innocent. To my chagrin, bad guys have begun running parts of the government, making it difficult to continue to serve this nation and protect the innocent. But I, for one, will never stop trying, and I'll never forget my oath. Thank you.
That was FBI Agent Garrett O'Boyle testifying. You could hear how he's getting choked up. I'm joined right now by Reverend James Harden. And James, it's good to have you back with me today. Thank you for your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me back, Drew.
I always want to see the good in people and the good in situations. But when you got 24 whistleblowers coming out and saying, hey, wait a minute, pro-lifers are targeted. Catholics are targeted. I'm going to just take a wild guess. I'm assuming that this does not surprise you.
I'm not surprised at all. This is what we've been saying since last year when we realized the FBI was intentionally meddling in the investigation process and slow-walking justice. And then when we heard word from Garrett O'Boyle back in March, that's the guy we were just listening to, Special Agent Garrett O'Boyle said that the FBI had issued new threat tags, including looking for people that have or adhere to pro-life beliefs and looking into what they called, quote, pregnancy centers. This is all while peaceful pro-life pregnancy centers are being violently attacked by pro-abortion domestic terror group Jane's Revenge. It's an Antifa front group. And, there have been over 300 attacks now on peaceful pro-life entities. There have been only four indictments, but only as was noticed today, Tuesday, in a subcommittee hearing. Those four indictments relate to one particular group and incidents in north of Miami, Florida. So of over 300 incidents, the FBI is not actually investigating. Where are the Dawn SWAT raids for these domestic terrorists that are targeting pro-life people? And so last week, we saw the Department of Homeland Security come out. Basically, there's some revelations that basically revealed that, they're profiling pro-life moms as potential domestic terror threats. pro-life moms? Are you kidding me? You're talking about my wife?
I know.
I mean, do they know what they're doing? I mean, this is seditious. This is treasonous. I mean, what's going on right now in the FBI, as Garrett O'Boyle said, you know, look, FBI agents have an oath that they have to adhere to, and the oath is not to the FBI. The oath is to the Constitution of the United States. It's to the rule of law. And that's what all these FBI agents need to remember. And Stephen Friend, I've heard Stephen Friend, the whistleblower that whose pay has been suspended, he was basically saying, look, unfortunately, the corruption has creeped into the rank and file of the FBI. I'm not saying every FBI agent is bad. I'm just saying you got to start with the seventh floor. And we need a thorough investigation into federal corruption of law enforcement conducted by independent special counsel or military tribunal in circuits where the majority of the appointed judges are not defending the Constitution. I mean, we've got to have state governors, state attorneys general, local sheriffs protecting pro-life citizens like Mark Houck and his family. I mean, we got to have where's the governor of Tennessee or the governor of Pennsylvania standing up saying you can't just come in here and arrest our citizens on trumped up phony charges of FACE Act violations? This is what's happening in America right now. Violations of the 10th Amendment, violations of the 14th Amendment, violations of the First Amendment by government bad actors, as Special Agent Garrett O'Boyle said. These are bad actors. And, you know, we're talking about undermining the rule of law here, where elected officials and federal law enforcement are conspiring to deprive peaceful pro-life people, including pro-life Catholics, of equal protection under the law, turning the investigative and arresting power of federal law enforcement on them simply because their religious and political ideology differs with the Biden administration. That makes the federal law enforcement agency a Biden administration kind of Maoist Red Guard. And that is that should be of serious concern to any law-abiding citizen who loves the rule of law and the Constitution of the United States. We are not here to be servants of a tyrannical government. We are a government by the people and for the people because we are made in the image of God. We are endowed by our Creator, as the Declaration of Independence is, our Creator, not by our government with fabricated rights. We are endowed by our Creator with inalienable rights. We are made in His image and therefore equally valuable. And that includes preborn boys and girls. And pro-life people are being attacked and denied equal protection of the law because simply because we happen to believe that preborn boys and girls need equal protection of the law as well. And I've said this before, Drew, you've heard me say this before, but it's not the government's job to decide who qualifies as a person under the law and who doesn't. It's the government's job to protect all people equally. And when the federal law enforcement begins to turn its power of the sword against its peaceful citizens, well, then something needs to change dramatically. I'm talking about presidential candidates need to say, hey, not only do we need to stand against abortion, we need to stand against this injustice, this systemic injustice that's being leveraged against peaceful citizens of this country. We need to revamp federal law enforcement and basically freeze all the funding until we can get a thorough investigation into this matter, not just at the FBI, but the DOJ, ATF, DHS. I mean, you name it. These organizations at the highest level, at the highest level, need to be, turned over.
If you want to join us, you want to sound off, you've got a question, a comment, an insight, feel free to dial in. It's 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. You can call now and get in. What do you think is going to come of these hearings by Jim Jordan? Anything?
Well, my hope is that these hearings are going to raise awareness and in the general population, especially in the population of special agents in the FBI. My hope is that more whistleblowers are going to come out and recognize that, look, just because your superior says that you need to do something that violates the constitutional rights of a citizen doesn't mean you need to do it.
Right.
We need more brave men and women coming out of the FBI and the DHS and other federal law enforcement branches standing against this corruption that's coming down from the Biden administration, because the Biden administration, the executive branch, is in control of the federal law enforcement. My hope is that again, like presidential hopefuls, will begin to raise awareness. Because look, They need to talk about a solution here. We've got a systemic corruption problem that has burrowed into federal law enforcement, and presidential candidates need to figure out how to solve this problem. And if they can't talk about this, perhaps they should just bow out of the race altogether.
Earlier this year, the FBI's Richmond field office, they wrote a memo on dealing with Catholics who go to traditional Latin mass. I was really shocked by that one in particular. I don't see them as a threat any more than I do pro-lifers. I mean, pro-lifers are the most gentle people that are out there. The attorney general at the time, he still is, Merrick Garland, and the FBI director, I think it was Christopher Wray, they tried to pass off as, that was an errant FBI agent. It was a mistake. You know, that should never have been done. Is that what the whistleblowers are now saying? And again, like I don't want to vilify the entire FBI, because I know that there are some really good men and women that work in that agency. I have a friend who's an FBI agent. But when I see, as you point out so eloquently, the targeting, using the power of this agency against the citizens of this country, it should give every American pause. So what are we to make of the excuse that was made that that was an errant FBI agent, maybe somebody too zealous? I mean, I don't know.
Well, it has come out that that particular memo that was leaked out of I think it was the Washington Bureau, Washington, D.C. Bureau, was in fact propagated throughout other bureaus throughout the country. And furthermore, there was not only a plan to spy on these types of pro-life Catholics, but they actually started to spy on these pro-life Catholics. Look, The FBI shifted its mode of operation away from criminal investigations regarding predicate acts to becoming an internal, intelligence agency turned on its own citizens. And that happened apparently back around 9/11 during the Bush administration. So, you know, the Merrick Garland, we believe, was intentionally perjuring himself. Wow. I mean, he knew the truth. He knew what was going on, but it tried to cover it up. And how do you deal with an attorney general who's perjuring himself under oath at the Senate Judiciary Committee? So I looked into it, Drew. Yeah. You know what you do? The Senate Judiciary Committee refers it to the DOJ. Well, who's in control of the DOJ? It's Merrick Garland.
Right.
I mean, so what does that mean? Does that mean he can lie whenever he wants? I think we need to appoint special counsel. But then the question is, who appoints special counsel? It's the Department of Justice. We've got a major problem with circular corruption going on in this upper echelons of federal law enforcement and the Biden administration. I mean, just look at who's responsible for investigating civil rights crimes in the DOJ. And civil rights crimes includes firebombing of pregnancy centers like ours in Buffalo. Well, it's Kristen Clark. Kristen Clark is in charge of the Department of Civil Rights Investigations, and she is a known BLM Antifa supporter. And she's for defunding the local police, and she is known to be vehemently opposed to pro-life pregnancy centers. Yeah. So is it any wonder that they're deprioritizing investigations on not just deprioritizing, but actually turning their investigative power on pregnancy centers? I've got it on fairly good authority. By fairly good authority, I can't tell you exactly who, because we've got private investigators, that the FBI has been investigating us, the victims, not to mention the fact that when we got firebombed back last June, I mean, $500,000 of damage, two firefighters injured.
Wow.
The New York governor, Kathy Hochul, signed a law 6 days later to investigate pregnancy centers instead of the arsonists, and referred to us as Neanderthals in their press conference.
Wow.
I mean, the vitriol, is an all-out peaceful pro-life people, Drew.
That's crazy. Yeah, news broke today that Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia is introducing not only articles of impeachment against Joe Biden today, but she has filed, I think, similar impeachment articles against the Attorney General, against Merrick Garland, the FBI Director Christopher Wray, and the Department of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas as well. The White House is saying, hey, this is just trolling. Maybe nothing will come from it. You think that has any ground, any merit?
It has a lot of merit. The question is whether or not, the Senate would actually approve. If we can get that, get traction there with the House, I think, not only will we get an impeachment to get these people out, but I think we've got grounds for real criminal case against some of these people, conspiring to deprive people of their constitutional rights, pro-life citizens, right, of equal protection under the law. Okay. These are crimes that carry significant jail time. They're potentially seditious, potentially treasonous. I mean, yeah, you know, a lot of people don't know what the penalty is for treason, but it's, you know, it's the ultimate penalty. You know, yeah, we're talking about violations of the Third KKK Act of 1871. If criminal investigations, actually are instigated, we're going to see the, you know, major elements of pro-abortion politicians in charge of the Democratic Party essentially, you know, falling to criminal charges and going to jail. Wow. They're not just going to lose their power; they're going to lose their freedom, and rightly so, by the way, based on what we've been experiencing and what we've been seeing these last 12 months.
Yeah, my guest, Reverend James Hardin, I only have you for a few moments. I'm curious, too, because I know, your clinic was not just firebombed. I think somebody spray-painted your clinic afterwards, right, with the sign liars on it. I know the FBI caught that person pretty quickly. Whatever happened to the firebombing? What happened there? That's a pretty serious attack.
Yeah, nothing. Nothing happened with the firebombing. We know there were multiple perpetrators. We had to file a lawsuit just to get our video back from local law enforcement because they were knuckling under to the FBI in not giving us our video surveillance back so that we could actually begin the process of, you know, creating a case against whoever it is that did it. You know, they've been slow walking it. And we did provide local law enforcement with video surveillance of the most recent vandal. No. During oral arguments of, you know, the chemical abortion case. And they're refusing, the FBI, the DOJ, they're refusing to press FACE Act violation charges, indict this person for violations of the FACE Act, even though Merrick Garland said to the Senate Judiciary Committee under oath that he would. We know that there's rampant corruption. They're not applying the law equally to violence against pro-life people. We're hoping that things change.
Well, I am grateful for all you do. I really am. I know we feel like we're outnumbered and outgunned, but at least this is now coming to life. We can see the bias against pro-lifers, against Catholics, and hopefully some good will come from all of this. James, if people want to follow you, learn more about what you're doing, what's the best way to connect?
Oh, thanks, Drew. If people want to learn more, they can go to CompassCareCommunity.com. That's CompassCareCommunity.com.
CompassCareCommunity.com. My thanks to Reverend James Hardin. Look forward to next time we catch up, okay? It'll be great.
Me too. God bless.
God bless you. I've got to take a short pause. When we come back, I will change gears. I want to put my finger on the pulse, if we could, very quickly on the economy here and what's happening. There's been some advancement now with whether or not we're going to default, or I shouldn't say default, whether or not we're going to raise the budget ceiling. When we come back, Chris Temple will be stopping by. He'll bring you up to speed on the latest, and we'll talk more. Stay with me.
Your news, the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Your news now.
This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More info, including disclosures at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
This negotiation is about the outlines of what the budget will look like, not about whether or not we're going to, in fact, pay our debts. The leaders have all agreed we will not default. Every leader has said that. Yesterday, we all agreed that both the Speaker McCarthy and I would designate senior members that we would negotiate to give our authority to make agreements in detail of what we wanted. So we narrowed the group. We narrowed the group to meet and hammer out our differences. And we've done that. In fact, they met last night. They're going to be meeting again today. And I'll be in constant contact with my team while I'm at the G7. And I'll be in close touch with Speaker McCarthy and other leaders as well.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that was the president. Of course, we are getting closer every day to a critical moment when it comes to our national debt, whether or not we're going to raise the ceiling or not. The president said he would not negotiate. Now we are negotiating. The threat of the American government possibly defaulting on repaying its loans, it still looms large over the country. I don't think we're going to do it. I don't think we've ever done that. So I think both parties, as you heard the president say, are going to work something out. So that means you got to negotiate. There are negotiations going on. They took place yesterday. They're underway now. Wall Street is a good indicator. I looked at the numbers not too long ago. They closed higher on optimistic hopes that those talks are going to bring about some resolution. And as you heard yesterday, President Biden canceled part of his trip because of the crisis. You know, he's scheduled to, as you heard him say, go to Japan for a G7 meeting, but he was also going to go to Papua New Guinea and also to Australia while he was on that side of the planet. He cut that part of the trip out. So he's going to come back, and rightly so. I mean, that was the right thing to do. Under the law, though, the federal government, the way it works is you just can't spend more than a limit that Congress imposes. Congress holds the purse, right? So the whole idea is to force the government to keep its spending of your dollars, your tax dollars, under control. But the law's proven to be kind of a farce because every time they start bumping up against the ceiling, what happens? Congress raises it. Oh, we'll just raise it. So what's happening now, and our debt is closing in on $32 trillion, so we need to stop spending, right? What's happening now is that the House Republicans are trying to respond to their own constituents who want spending reined in rather than just raising the ceiling again. But the president doesn't like that idea at all. They don't want any cuts. He just wants Congress to raise the ceiling that so spending can continue on as it always does. But the Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen, she gave us a deadline. She kind of drew a line in the sand. She says you have until June 1st to get done because that's when the government's going to run out of money. Now, you got to remember the government's fiscal year, it actually starts October 1st. So it raises the question of how the government is running out of money 4 months before it's supposed to. At least that's my observation. I was thinking, how'd that happen? So if the negotiations aren't successful, the result could be nothing less than catastrophic. I don't think it's going to happen, but look, who knows? The Fed chair, right, Jerome Powell, he said that if it came to such a disaster, he could pull some strings and use some options, but he called those options loathsome. Now, what they are, I don't know. I'm joined today by somebody who understands this intimately. His name's Chris Temple. He's the editor and publisher of the National Investor. You can find them online at nationalinvestor.com. Go check them out, nationalinvestor.com. I always appreciate Chris's insights, and it's great to have him at the table with us today. Chris, good afternoon.
And good afternoon, Drew. How you been?
I'm well. Hanging in there. I hope you and your wife make it to my neck of the woods again, because I owe you dinner this time. Looking forward to seeing you.
Well, we'll be up there in the middle of July, and I'll have to come in the studio, too.
Yeah, come in studio here. We'd love to do that with you. Chris, fill me in on what's going on. How do we get to this point? It's not the first time we've been here. It was just irresponsible spending. That. Was it, you know... Was it the Ukraine war? How did we fall short 4 months early?
Well, we'll make this brief. I just put on my Twitter feed, and my Twitter is @NatInvestor, a chart showing going back to the 50s, the president who presided over the most increases to the debt ceiling. And guess who the winner is running away with double the increases in the debt ceiling than his nearest competitors?
Wow.
Ronald Reagan.
Wow.
Okay. So even Ronald Reagan, and of course, in relative terms, we weren't talking about as the volume of dollars back then. Even he got sucked into this situation where as time has gone on, federal spending has gone up exponentially. The debt has gone up exponentially. Everybody gets to this point every now and then and wrings their hands and says, woe is us, or more so, woe is the other party. It's all their fault. And McCarthy, at least, was honest enough in an interview yesterday to admit when somebody pressed him on it that, yeah, you know, we didn't object to raising the debt ceiling when our guy, President Trump, was in the White House. And it's always, you know, the other party's fault. So, look, the only time that we've ever come close to an actual all-out default on anything was in 2011. When Obama was president and they missed a couple of different deadlines to raise a debt ceiling, it was bad enough that Standard & Poor's lowered the U.S.'s credit rating from AAA to AA, where it's been since. And it caused some upheaval in the markets, which back then were kind of shaky to begin with because we were still in the wake of the 2008 crisis. But eventually everybody, you know, rallied around. They raised the debt limit and the markets went nutso to the upside. because all good, the emergency's over and we got all of this money being printed again. So this problem didn't come out overnight. This problem has been with us for many, many, many decades. The Federal Reserve, contrary to what Jerome Powell tries to say, is the enabler of this. The Fed has monetized a big chunk of the national debt for many, many years now. And there's nothing institutionally that compels either party to rein in spending. So it's not going
to
happen.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I was, you know, I try to listen to lots of different medium. And I was driving into the studio yesterday and I put on a very liberal progressive talk radio show. They were actually talking about the debt ceiling and they made Republicans look like they were giant villains in all this. They don't want to, you know, cut the military spending and a whole litany of other things. And you know, they're going to take money away from veterans and from all these other people. And then I listen to conservatives, and on the other side of that aisle, you're hearing about how obstinate the Dems are. What are Republicans, what are House Republicans trying to do? The president made it sound like they're cutting away like 90% of spending, which, you know, wouldn't be a bad idea, but I find that unimaginable. I can't even imagine that happening. So how do you see it? What's the truth?
Well, you know, look, let me go back to the example of President Reagan again. You, I'm sure, will well remember this as well. Here was a guy under whom the national debt exploded. When he was elected, we were wringing our hands over $40 billion annual deficits under Jimmy Carter. They were approaching $300 billion by the time Reagan left office. And it wasn't that we didn't have tax receipts coming in. Reaganomics, as far as it went, was successful. Lowering tax rates was successful. Receipts to the federal government went up substantially. Problem was spending went up more substantially. And yet, even during those years when they would have these fights from time to time, you know, you heard terminology like that 70s slasher movies, you know, cut, hack, gouge, you know. And at best, all that ever happened was just slow down the rate of increases that had already been planned in federal spending. So, you know, we have long since been on this road of spending beyond our means. The Federal Reserve is the enabler of this. That's where the problem, I think, institutionally really is that once upon a time, and, you know, and there was that brief period in the late 70s and into 1980, as you remember, Drew, where Paul Volcker made the government answer directly to the markets. He didn't step in there. There was no such thing as quantitative easing back
right,
then.
Right, right.
And when deficits started to go up, what happened? Well, the government had to pay up to borrow money because it wasn't just borrowing this newly created money from the Fed. It had to go to the markets for it. And that's why interest rates went up to double digits for a while. Well, that was the only time that we've seen that in our lifetimes, because since then, it's always been the Fed covering for these people, whether it's the Republicans wanting to spend money to conquer the world or Democrats to give everybody cradle to grave care.
Yeah,
so our values are screwed up to start with, and that's where this problem is. And you know, the Republicans now in Congress are valiantly trying to say, okay, let's finally rein in spending. Some of them are talking about a measure to try and police the border more so as part of a deal. The progressives on the other side. This is going to be interesting to see how the Senate deals with all of this stuff, because there's a big slug of progressives in the Senate led by Bernie Sanders who really want to be a stick in the mud, and they're not going to vote for anything
right.
where they think Biden is giving in on one single thing. So we could still see a delay in raising this thing. But you know, it's a matter of whether Schumer in the Senate and McConnell and then, Jeffries and McCarthy, can they get a majority to at least agree on let's not hold a debt ceiling hostage, which frankly, and this is a whole other discussion, we should, that legislation is ridiculous on its face anyway.
Yeah.
Because what a lot of people have honestly and correctly said is that this whole argument over the debt ceiling is on money that past Congresses, Republican and Democrat both, have already appropriated. So don't play games with it now. You know, change your spending habits going forward.
Yeah. My guest today is Chris Temple. I only have him for a few moments. And if you want to join the conversation, I'm going to open the phones. I'll take your calls in a minute. You can dial in at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. And you can get in right now if you want to join us. You know, we're talking about the debt ceiling and how, if you're just joining us, Chris, the markets responded pretty positively today. So it raises a couple questions. I mean, how far apart are we right now in terms of where both sides of the issue are? And then, you know, maybe you can explain how this and why this impacts financial markets both domestically and globally.
Well, look, even after the U.S. had its debt downgraded with the, you know, the big debt fight back in 2011 between Obama and Republicans in that case, you're still talking about the U.S. currency being the world's reserve currency, a little tarnished these days because elsewhere in the world there are other countries and blocks that are looking to use the yuan or local currencies, at least for day-to-day trade. But even that, nobody rivals the U.S. dollar in U.S. markets and U.S. debt securities as far as being the most desirable place among developed nations. So, you know, even if we see another kerfuffle get bigger than you and I might think it's going to now, where are people going to go? To the euro, whose banking system is a shambles and hasn't recovered even from 2008 and is now worse? You're going to go to China, which is thumping its chest that, well, our currency is going to be the future. Yeah, we none of us will live to see it, but currency is one thing. What about China's banking system and markets?
Yeah, right.
Nobody in their right mind will park money there. And sure, you can use Chinese yuan to do a transaction today, but you're not going to put money in that country, which has no transparency and changes the rules as it goes along. So, you know, even in the worst possible scenario, I think ahead of us, yeah, if this thing doesn't get resolved, you might see a bit of a hiccup in the financial markets, but I think it'd be minor because, you know, the U.S. is still the cleanest shirt in a dirty laundry pile.
Well, that's a great saying. You know, it's the numbers are the numbers, and we understand what has got to be done. What role, in your opinion, I don't know if it has any factor in this at all, if it has any influence, what role does public opinion play in this whole debt ceiling debate? And are there any notable trends or shifts in recent years?
I don't think there has been. I mean, you know, I follow, of course, the financial press all day long because that's what I do. And you hear about it, you know, nonstop. But as far as on the nightly news, as far as if you go out to dinner tonight, you go down to your local Cheers or whatever your local watering hole might be, how many people are talking about it? Not very many, if anybody at all. They're talking about sports. They're talking about how work went today. They're talking about everything. But, you know, a much bigger thing to consumers and investors alike is the Fed going to raise interest rates again? Are they done raising rates? I don't think they're done raising rates.
Wow.
And that's where the market's going to get in trouble, is that the financial markets with these rallies of late think that the Fed is not only done hiking rates, but they've priced in a few rate cuts between now and the first of next year. They're going to be proven very wrong.
Wow.
And so that's where the problem is. And I think the problem also exists for consumers with the chronically high cost of living. You know, Walmart came out this morning, Drew, with their financials and better than the bad news we heard from Target and certainly the really bad news that we heard from Home Depot a few days ago as far as consumers putting off purchases. But even with Walmart, when for its own account, things are looking pretty good for them, they still said that the number one issue that they see with their business and with the economy is chronically high cost of living that is not coming back down fast enough. Wow. And we had yet another Fed official tell us that today. And saying that she thinks that they may not be done raising interest rates. So those are much bigger issues for consumers in the markets than what is largely a political kabuki theater over the debt ceiling, in my view.
Oh, kabuki theater. I love that. Ryan in Hawaii is going to join us. Ryan, hi. You're on the air with Chris Temple. Go right ahead with your question.
Hey, yeah, I'm just curious. I mean, I heard you guys talk about plenty of different factors. I haven't heard anything in relation to previous administrative tax cuts.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious, you know, because I hear these stories, oh, the NFL, you guys just talked about sports, you know, billion-dollar organization not paying any taxes. So, like, why aren't we targeting organizations like that are flush in surplus and they're not paying their fair share?
Right. Ryan, thank you for your call. Good to hear from Hawaii. You got about 2 minutes. I'll let you respond if you can, Chris.
This subject is one of the several examples that could be cited, and I'm glad we got this question over exactly what a joke this everything is to begin with. because when the president, for example, was saying that he wants everybody to pay their fair share, you know, it's still all political. You know, Democrats and Republicans alike for many years, including Joe Biden as a senator for many years, wrote into the tax code numerous ways in which their benefactors had tax breaks that Joe Sixpack and Sally Soccer Mom and a small business down the street don't get.
Yeah.
Okay. So do we have a fair tax system? Heck no. In a lot of respects, we don't have a fair tax system, but it's the one that the grifters in both parties wanted because it benefits them. It benefits the Beltway and all of the lobbyists and so forth. So yeah, you could find numerous ways to get greater tax revenues by making the system truly more fair.
Yeah.
Instead, we've got one where the tax code exists, number one, to benefit the politically favored, and number two, to use as a bludgeon against somebody who gets their nose out of joint and you need to indict somebody.
Well, Chris, I got to leave it right there. My apologies to everyone on hold. I wish I had a few more minutes, but I am out of time. Please check Chris Temple out, and you can get plugged into all of his expertise and knowledge at the National Investor. That's nationalinvestor.com. Nationalinvestor.com. Go check it out now. Bookmark that. Hey, Chris, thank you. Always great to have you here.
Anytime. We'll talk again soon, I hope.
Appreciate the time. God bless. That's Chris Temple. I'm out of time for the day. Kale Clark is coming straight up. Until tomorrow, remember, God loves you, and so do I. Have a great day.